If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Good evening, America. Welcome to a Just Coffee Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and education about judicial injustice. I'm Sam Thurman, along with Evan Lopez and Cliff Stewart. How you guys doing?
Hey, doing good, Sam. Doing good.
All right, let's get right down to business. This evening's show, we got a lot that we're going to cover. We got some current events in law and judicial news coming up. We're going to revisit some things that we've talked about as far as the IRP 6 case with regard to how IRP conducted business and dealing with staffing companies. So we have a certified expert, I would say, wouldn't you say, Cliff?
Oh, yeah,
as far
absolutely.
As Andrew Alberelli. And Mr. Alberelli is the principal or the CEO of Remy Corporation in Denver, Colorado. He's going to be joining us here shortly. We also have in the studio Joseph Thurman. He is also in the staffing industry. And so we're going to just dispel a lot of the things that the government would have the jury to believe at the time during the IRP 6 case. And so we're going to talk about that a little bit later. Also, for our exoneree moment, we have William Lopez out of New York. He's going to be joining us along with Jeffrey Deskovit. And so we'll talk a little bit about that case and what went down there. We got our conservative champions commentary that we're going to cover a little bit later as well. And let me see what else we got going on here. Ethel. Excuse me.
Uh-oh.
As far as the IRP 6 are concerned, you know, we've talked about all the things that we got going on there with the 200 pages of missing transcript.
Yes.
We're trying to get Attorney General Eric Holder to do something about that.
Oh, yeah.
We got a petition going. We got phone calls going. We got email, letters, and all that kind of stuff. What can we ask people to do to help in that regard?
Well, one of the things that we want to ask people to do is to contact their local radio and television stations and ask them why they're not covering or talking about the IRP 6 case. This is all over social media, and we know that there's not anybody out there that has some type of connection with social media. So do that for us. And also, we're asking you to call Attorney General Eric Holder's office at 202-514-2003 or 2005, and tell them to investigate, the over 200 pages of missing transcript in the IRP 6 case.
And we got some good things that's going to be coming up about that, but we're not going to get into it right now. But Cliff, let's do some shout-outs, and then we'll move on.
Yeah, I want to do a shout-out to Duke Brooks of Conservative Nation Media. Duke is the one who has made it possible for you to hear us on this Tuesday night spot. So we want to tell Duke, we appreciate you and everybody who's working with you, for giving us the opportunity. And we know that we wouldn't be here. You guys wouldn't be hearing us over the airways if it wasn't for him. Also, Scott Osborne of Contending for Truth. Scott and company has made it possible for us to have our Thursday night spot. And we want to make sure that we always let him know that we appreciate what he's doing for Just Cause and the IRP 6 as well.
And I think, Cliff, tomorrow on Duke's show, he's actually, the plan is, and he's planning on talking about legalized marijuana in the state of Colorado. So he's looking to talk to some attorneys in the state of Colorado about that. So we'll see how that show goes. Tune in to Duke Brooks tomorrow night. As far as our disclaimer goes, Cliff, Ethel, and I are not attorneys, and a Just Cause Coast to Coast does not provide legal advice. So please contact your personal legal advisor for your legal needs. Also, the opinions expressed by callers or guests do not necessarily reflect that of a Just Cause Coast to Coast or a Just Cause. And as always, we certainly appreciate you tuning in and spending time with us on this evening as we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. Cliff and Ethel, let's get to some current events and some law and judicial news type stuff and share some information with our listeners.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about this. There's an article, and it's entitled, How Long is Too Long? Congress Revisits Mandatory Sentencing. And, anybody who's been listening to the news, you've been hearing about the different task force they have in place. You know, Eric Holder, the attorney general, he got up last year and talked before the American Bar Association about all these things with the Justice Department, how they're incarcerating too many people. and for no good law enforcement reason. And outside of that, you know, they have these mandatory sentences that came into play back in 1986 when, you know, anybody who was around then knew that crack was the drug that was in all the big cities, that, you know, it was blamed on crack, that it was the reason for everything. You know, crack became the new Satan. And so, you know, anybody getting caught with crack, they were given these mandatory sentences under the federal sentencing guidelines, you know, of 5, 10, and 20 years for their first and second time drug sale offenses. And that's not saying, okay, you sold a kilo of crack, so we give you 20 years. No, you sell a $5 rock, we give you 10 years. You get caught again, you know, the second time selling a $5 rock, you get 20 years. And just like we talked about, I think it was last week where we talked about the mandatory sentencing guidelines where this this kid was caught in this sting operation where he sold police, you know, on three different occasions, these like dime bags or something like that of marijuana. And they put him in prison for 55 years. So you have these mandatory guidelines that say, you know, not only if you get caught, but even if you get entrapped, even if they say, okay, well, we got you selling to an undercover agent once, we're going to get you to do it again and again and again, then they can pile up all these sentences. So, you know, the Judiciary Committee Chairman Patrick Leahy and some others, you know, they got Tea Party, Democrats, and Republicans are heading this up to say, hey, we need to stop with these federal, these mandatory minimum sentences. And in this article, this says, under discussion are proposals that would cut minimum sentences by half, give judges more sentencing discretion, and retroactively apply new crack cocaine sentencing standards to prisoners convicted under previous requirements. So, I mean, you have to understand, you have people who are in prison, like, from the 80s, early 90s, for these nonviolent drug charges. And the Human Rights Watch study released in December found that the Justice Department and federal drug cases regularly coerces guilty pleas by threatening these long sentences. So you could be somebody that, hey, you know, I knew that my brother, that my cousin, that somebody, you know, my friend, my associate was selling drugs. So they're calling me an accomplice and saying, because I'm an accomplice, they're going to give me a minimum sentence of 5, 10, 20 years. So then they have this person. They either give them this crazy sentence or say, you read out everything that you know about. Everybody's like, I have nothing to do with the drug scene, but now I'm a criminal.
And you know what's crazy about this, Cliff, is the fact that, you know, they're talking about how the overcrowding in prisons, the overwork of the prison guards, and the stress on the budget.
Right.
Yet you have, it's like a double-edged sword. So you got a situation where you have the mandatory minimums, and then even act as though you're going to not deal with them, then they still coerce you into getting a guilty plea.
Yeah,
and so that still throws more people into the prison system.
Exactly.
And, you know, they have here that 30% of the Justice Department's budget is now dedicated to federal prisons. The cost has doubled since the year 2000.
Wow.
That is
30%.
That is ridiculous.
And so, and Ethel, that goes right into, it rolls right into an article that you,
really
were looking at earlier.
But, and one thing I was going to say, you know, along with that article that Cliff was talking about, and it was telling you about they're getting pushback from prosecutors on this mandatory minimum sentencing. And they're saying that the real power of the federal mandatory minimum sentences is their ability to hold it over certain people's head in solving kingpin drug cases and major murders. So then why are these people that have absolutely nothing in their pocket are being sentenced to prison for all this time?
Right.
And this be held over their head?
And the kingpins are not the ones that they're catching.
That's
they're
right.
still catching the street pushers, the guy with, you know, an ounce of weed, you know, a couple ounces of cocaine. That's still the guy that they're finding. And you know, in this article, it says that they've touted this reform proposal as an effort to increase public safety and reduce prison costs. In introducing his legislation, White House noted that 30% – oh, that wasn't the part I wanted to read. This is what I wanted to read. The policy of mandatory minimum sentences for drug offenses has empowered the government to effectively nullify the constitutional right to a trial. So they're just getting people say, okay, if you don't confess, even though there's no proof that you did anything, but if you go to trial, you know, we can indict a ham sandwich and everybody's guilty that goes up on federal charges.
Wow.
So you, it's taken away the constitutional right to everybody in the public to a trial, because when's the last time you heard of somebody fighting the federal government and actually getting off? It rarely happens. And what the you know, the FAMM, you know, they say the question we have to ask is, why is prison always the answer?
Yeah,
we have to unlearn the bad habit we've developed of incarceration first.
That's
and that is
true.
The truth. It cannot be that we have to, you know, get it, put them, lock them up, put them in jail before anything else.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's what we do.
And that's obviously not the solution, especially when, you know, like you were saying, 30% of the budget is going to prisons. And
right.
And one of these articles says that that amounts to $6.4
billion. $6.4 billion. That is sickening. Mm. Well, ConservativeNationMedia.com is growing, and we couldn't think of a better way to expand our lineup than to give our very own Bing Fisher his very own show. Uncle Bing Fisher brings his engineer's insight and love of America to American by Design, Sunday evenings at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 Central, on ConservativeNationMedia.com. So stay with Conservative Nation Media 7 days a week, since we're making some big changes and we're just getting started. American by Design with Bing Fisher, Sundays at 6 Eastern, 5 Central, on ConservativeNationMedia.com. Where America always wins.
So on this, continuing on that theme as far as mandatory sentencing, Fox News on January 5th, 2014, just a week or so ago, they actually published an article as well, or had some information about this posted on their site. And so, Ethel, what were they talking about here?
They were talking about the alliance of the Tea Party and some of the liberal leaders in Congress that are pursuing major changes in mandatory sentencing laws. And, you know, with the growing concerns and stuff of the fairness of the sentences and the expenses of running federal prisons. And in looking at that, you know, they are saying that prison costs have soared in the past 30 years. And the yearly cost for one federal inmate ranges between $21,000 to $33,000, depending on the prison's level of security.
Wow.
That's amazing.
And, you know, we did a show not too long ago where we were looking at that and looking at how much it costs to incarcerate folks, and especially when you're talking low-risk, nonviolent inmates who could very well be on a home detention or home confinement or something like that. And they talked about the costs associated with that.
Right.
I mean, it's like night and day.
It is.
And yet you have the director of the Bureau of Prisons, Director Charles Samuels, you know, he was just before Congress, you know, talking about the
fact that,
hey, we need more money because we need more guards because, you know, we got too many people in prison. And now, but, you know, even they're looking at the fact that we need reform in the sense that we have to get people, you know, we got to look at alternatives.
We do.
Yeah, and I just want to, just one sentence in this that is really, really sickening. About half of the nation's more than 218,000 federal inmates are serving time for drug crimes, and virtually all of them face some form of mandatory minimum sentencing. That's
ridiculous.
Totally insane that 218,000 people went to prison because of mandatory minimum sentences.
Wow. Hey, let's get this other story in here real quick before we go to this break. Yeah. Along that same line, as far as reducing the population in prisons, is this thing about compassionate release.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you look at compassionate release, here's an article that was in ProPublica, and there was an inmate, Veronica Barnes. She was in Phoenix, Arizona, and she had petitioned for compassionate release. She found out that her husband had pancreatic cancer. Mm-hmm. She had two kids. Both of them were under the age of 10. Now, how sick is this? The assistant U.S. attorney who tried her actually supported her getting a compassionate release. And for folks who don't know what that is, it's basically if someone in your family is sick or someone is dying or whatever, you can get relief to basically go home and be with your loved ones, or even if you have to be the primary care person for someone in your family. Everyone in the chain approved it. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the catch. I think it was a year and 3 months after she submitted her application, And nearly 8 months after her husband had died, he died. So she didn't get out before he died. But then even after that, then the Bureau of Prisons came back and denied her request for compassionate release. We just heard about something like that also here locally.
Sure did.
Where an inmate in Florence, Colorado, his mother died.
Yep.
Everyone in the chain said, yeah, let him go home and be with his, be, you know, to take care of business as far as the temple. And for the first file, your favorite friend, he denied it. Yet they're still,
a model inmate.
You got situations where they you know, what they're talking about most of the time. Hey, we need to do something to relieve the pressure on the population of the prison, but we're not going to do anything to let anybody This is a Just Cause Coast to Coast work for education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. When we come back, we'll have Andrew Alberelli, Joseph Thurman, talking about the IRP6 and staffing industry. Don't go anywhere. Right back.
Aren't you glad the so-called fairness doctrine doesn't apply here? This is the sound of a brand new outdoor grill being hurled off a 20-story building. Now a stylish glass coffee table. An electric guitar. These are the things you could enjoy all cast into oblivion. Because when you throw away money on wasted electricity, you throw away everything you could have bought with it. Visit EnergySavers.gov and get tips on how to save energy and money. Then do things like switch to Energy Star light bulbs or Energy Star appliances, and you could save hundreds of dollars a year. So this doesn't happen to the recliner you've had your eye on, or this to the treadmill on your wish list, or this to the shiny new bike your kid's been asking for. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at EnergySavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
There's hundreds of fun and simple things you and your family can do to live a healthier lifestyle. Here's 20 of them. Walk to work. Walk the dog. Have the dog walk you. Take a hike. Take a bike. Skate. Dance. Hop. Jump. Do the Humpty Hump. Skip seconds. Skip dessert. Skip, skip, skip to my loo. Don't skip breakfast. Drink H2O. Lower your sodium. Raise the roof. Shake your booty. Stock up on vegetables. And don't forget to eat them. Search We Can online to find more ways you and your family can get healthy together. A message from the Ad Council, HHS, and NIH's We Can program.
Hi, this is Dave Vance inviting you to join me every Monday night for Inside Tennessee on conservativenationmedia.com. Even if you're not from the volunteer state, you'll want to know what's happening because one day it will affect you. Every week you'll hear interviews with experts, legislators, and citizens who are fed up and making a stand. So join us every Monday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central Time for Inside Tennessee on conservativenationmedia.com.
Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. Thank you for joining us this evening on conservativenationmedia.com. Callers, our call-in number is 718-305-7176, 718-305-7176. Cliff Stewart, Ethel Lopez joining me on as my co-host. We're all co-hosts.
We got it, Sam.
So this evening, we're going to talk about the IRP6. And one of the things that we've talked about in the past is how IRP Solutions conducted business and how this whole situation with IRP is a corporate debt collection case that got criminalized. And one of the key elements on this is how IRP engaged the services of staffing companies to build software, the case investigative lifecycle software, to build software for federal, state, and local law enforcement. So, Cliff, let's give a high-level overview of the IRP solution story, and then let's bring in Andrew as well as Joe on this conversation and point out the things where the government went wrong on this.
Yeah, one of the key issues on appeal is the fact that the government did not allow two expert witnesses in this case, one of which is Andrew Alberelli. As Sam mentioned earlier, he's the chief executive or principal of Remy Corporation. And Andrew was on the stand about to testify on behalf of the IRP-6 to basically let the jurors, the court, the judge, everybody know that the way that they conducted business with the staffing industry is par for the course. It is the way that it is done. It is how you do business in the staffing industry. Well, when Andrew gets on the stand, he introduces himself. The prosecutor, Matthew Kirsch, makes an objection, and the judge follows along with it and takes Andrew off the stand. And the crazy thing about this is their reason for saying that Andrew could not be an expert witness. The reason they said is because they did not get his credentials in time. Well, Andrew wrote a letter to the U.S. Attorney's Office on the 18th of July, 2011. Anybody who has been following this, and those of us who know about the case, know that the case started somewhere between the end and the end of September and beginning of October. So that gives us about 3 months that the U.S. Attorney's Office had Andrew's letter. And so they basically give this reason. The judge goes along with it, and it is totally disgusting because not only is Andrew an executive in the staffing industry, he also is an InfraGuard member. And I'll let Andrew get into some of these things. His credentials they're impeccable for being an expert witness. He's been an expert witness before that and after that. And it's just is mind-boggling. I mean, you know, when we look at it, we say, hey, the judge was working in coercion with the prosecutor to ensure that they got a conviction. And we'll let Andrew, you know, tell the story
and,
from
and
his
Cliff,
family.
Before we bring Andrew in, you know, folks who want to follow along with us on the story and do a little bit of background research, you can go to FreeTheIRP6, the number 6.org, FreeTheIRP6.org. And just a quick overview, IRP Solutions started in 2003. And then in 2005, the business was raided by the FBI. And during that time, the IRP Solutions was contacted by the Department of Homeland Security. And IRP Solutions went to Washington, D.C., did several demos of the case investigative lifecycle software, which was basically going to get the federal government and all the other law enforcement agencies to a point to where they would be able to share information and collaborate on information. Well, you know, you get a call from the Department of Homeland Security, you get a call from the federal government, and they say, we like what we see. Well, you're going to go back and do everything you could possibly do in order to, you know, build out that software. And that's exactly what IRP Solutions did. IRP Solutions went back to their corporate headquarters and, you know, took a look at how can we answer the mail? How can we get the solution built out as efficiently as possible and, you know, get this business rolling? Mm-hmm. Well, there were several things on the table as far as the federal government is concerned. You know, the government had asked for quotes. The case investigative lifecycle software had 18 modules. They asked for the confidential informant module first. That one module, IRP Solutions, provided the federal government with a quote of $100 million.
Yes.
Now, that's not small chump change there.
Oh.
And even prior to that, the government was talking to IRP Solutions about a $12 million pilot project. And IRP was on the map. IRP was on the radar of a lot of major contracts companies. And so, you know, IRP started using the staffing companies in order to get the right kind of talent in the company to build out the software, and then that's when they were accused of running a scam, which is, you know, crazy because there's so much stuff to dispute that with, you know, you had federal agents who were working in the building who said that the business was legit, the software was legit. You have you have the Department of Homeland Security who is reviewing the software and saying it's legit. You got Cal Forensics saying it's legit. Then you get into the courtroom, and then the judge pulls this stunt. Let's pull Andrew in.
All righty. Hey, Andrew, are you there?
I am here. Evening, gentlemen.
Hey, it's good to hear from you.
How
again.
Are you, Mr. Alberelli? Good to hear
I'm
you.
I'm doing well. Are you able to hear me?
Yes, we got you loud and clear.
Very good.
You know, we were talking a little bit in the intro about you as far as, you know, who you are and what you do, the kind of the role that you play in the staffing industry and in InfraGuard and, you know, Oracle User Group and things of that nature. If you would give us a overview of your credentials, don't be shy, lay it all out there.
Absolutely. Thank you. I've been the principal executive officer for the Remy Corporation for 15 years. I've been in the staffing business coming up on 19 years. I've really only had two jobs in my life. I was in the military, and I've been in the staffing game. As far as credentials, I've been an Oracle User Group president. I sit on the advisory board for the Oracle User Group. I was one of the first 20 members for InfraGuard for the Denver chapter here. InfraGuard is a FBI volunteer organization that assists the FBI in maintaining the infrastructure and protecting the infrastructure from standpoints of cyber securities and cyber threats. Staffing industry user group president for the Oracle user groups. I mean, my list goes on. So it gives you a good idea about my background and how long I've been in this game and the business that I do. And you just listening to that intro just brought back that weirdness of when I sat at the, you know, witness stand and got ready to start my testimony. Yeah. And to be immediately cut off. I just, you brought me right back to that moment. It was one of the most stunning moments I've ever seen in a courtroom because it followed no judicial processes that I was ever aware of. I've never seen that occur.
Wow.
Andrew, also, you know, in the letter that you sent to John Walsh, we just want to make sure that we get all of this in there.
John Walsh being the U.S. attorney.
The U.S. attorney, yeah. for the District of Colorado. Mm-hmm. You also stated in that letter that you've assisted the FBI in an investigation of a false network of candidates that were doing a bait and switch on the staffing firm. Can you give us a little bit of background on that? How that looked?
Absolutely. There was a group of from a country overseas that was infiltrating certain public sectors in the United States, and what they were doing was interviewing one person that was very knowledgeable of the software, and then they were sending someone else that knew nothing of the software and barely could speak English. And at night, they would do the work, and then they would upload the work that they did the night before. This network that they had reached all the way from Arizona to Minnesota to New York to California and all the way to Hawaii. And we were able to rat's nest through all these people and find out how they were able to pull this scam off. And it was a major scam that they were playing. And there was not, you know, in the staffing business, you don't necessarily meet every single person. You're going through their credentials and their backgrounds. You're technically screening them. The technical screening was being done offshore. There wasn't any way to verify that that person was the same person that did the interview.
Right. So needless to say, but I'll say it anyway, you kind of recognize fraud when you see it, especially when it comes to the staffing industry. Would that be a fair statement?
That would be a very fair statement. We'll go far as two other examples to show you. We had a candidate here in Colorado. It does snow every once in a while. Mm-hmm. And the fella called us and said, I can't make the meeting because it snowed out. And mm-hmm. the person was a graduate of Annapolis. And you kind of think to yourself, here's a person that's from Annapolis, you know, that graduated from Annapolis. He's not going to let a little bit of snow
mess with
his day. He's going to plow through it.
Mm-hmm.
Coming to find out, Annapolis is misspelled on his resume, and he was a complete fraud. We have another software that we use, and this is there's a group of people called H-1Bs. They're under a term to come into the United States on a visa. In a university in India, they produced in 2007 6,600 graduates. In our database, we have 27,400 people that have graduated from that university mm-hmm. for the same year. So fraud is really a piece of pride for staffing companies that are always taking an eye and looking at the fraudulent behaviors in the staffing business. One piece you want to understand is 93% of every resume that's out there contains a lie.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So you really have to be that.
Yeah, that is amazing.
So you really have to be diligent about what you're doing and, you know, and understanding fraud.
Absolutely. And I think with all that laid out, people have to understand that, you know, Andrew Alberelli knows fraud when he sees it. One of the worst nightmares that can befall an American today is identity theft. If it happens to you, it may take months or even longer to recover from it. If you can recover at all, don't let it happen to you. Protect yourself in advance. Sign up today with LifeLock. LifeLock is a lot more than your standard credit monitoring service. LifeLock helps to protect your personal information using a combination of data surveillance techniques and outstanding member service. 24/7, 365 days a year. There's really nothing that comes close to LifeLock. To protect your identity with LifeLock and get 10% off their great service, go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the LifeLock banner. Network may not cover all transactions and the scope may vary. That's conservativenationmedia.com, then click on the LifeLock banner. You'll be very glad you did.
Whether you're on active duty, a veteran, or just admire American Armed Forces, there's no better place to get the widest variety of militaria than at Highlands Militaria. Highlands Militaria is one of America's premier distributors of Fox tactical gear and outdoor products. Veteran-owned and operated, Highlands Militaria offers new and used uniforms and insignia from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and today. With an emphasis on airborne and special operations insignia, gear, collectibles, and uniforms. If you need to replace a cherished badge or unit patch, or just want to gear up for your next outdoor adventure, go to Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria, where you'll find the best supply of the military gear you need. Shipping is always free with one-day handling time, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria. And thank you for your service.
One goat can make the difference between nourishment and hunger. One goat can make the difference between poverty and sustained income. In the war-torn areas of southern Sudan, one goat can make the difference between life and death. Find out how you can help. Visit goatsfortheoldgoat.org. That's goats, F-O-R, theoldgoat.org. Fighting hunger, one goat at a time.
Okay, so 5 tacos of cheese and a large soda, that's $10,012. Please drive around.
Wait, 10,000 what?
It's obvious you're buzzed and driving.
I've only had a few. I'm fine.
Yeah, the food's $12, but getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Please drive around. Actually, just park and come in.
Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
A Just Cause Coast to Coast, we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. I'm Sam Thurman with Cliff Stewart and Ethel Lopez. We're talking about the IRP 6 case this evening and the use of staffing companies and how that got twisted into a criminal case. On the phones, we have Mr. Andrew Alberelli, the principal executive officer for Remy Corporation. Andrew, again, welcome to the call.
Thank you, sir.
Hey, Andrew, I wanted to get into, you know, a little bit about your experience, your, you know, kind of relationship with the IRP 6. We got Demetrius Harper, Kendrick Barnes, Gary Walker, David Banks, Clinton Stewart, and Dave Zerpolo. And I know, you know, the one day we all came up to your office, and I believe it was me, Gary, and David came up there, you know, to sit down and for you to see a demo of the Silk software, which, you know, the government tried to say that it didn't exist. And can you give us a little, you know, overview what your thoughts about the software was and how you think that it could have assisted law enforcement?
The software was was actually a beautiful interface. It really worked very, very nicely. You could see where it was the perfect platform because it was very similar to an Oracle or PeopleSoft and Enterprise Resource Planning software. It was really, really nicely done. And the documentation, the methodologies that were embedded in it was perfect. And you could really see that it had an exponential way of catching the real criminals that were at large. And it was a wonderful, wonderful piece of software, so much so that Gary and I responded to an RFP for the county of Boulder with the proposal to use that software.
Right, right.
I don't know if you remember.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we responded to a proposal for that, and it got down to between one of two companies, and it chose the other company. Unfortunately, we didn't prevail on that deal.
Right, but it shows how you know how much it was and is and could be useful for law enforcement, even you know local, state, and federal level. And you know that was one of the things that during the IRP6 trial that they tried to say, you know, this software doesn't exist, it's vaporware, you know, it's not what they said. And one of their forensic scientists, Don Vilfer from Cali Forensics, which is a you know kind of a forensics analysis company, he did a write up on the software, and he said how useful it was, how he looked at it, and even at the time of the raid, how good the software was. And you know they had to back up off of that, but they still went down so many routes to basically stifle these guys and make sure that even during the case that the jury was not allowed to hear, you know, what was going on with the software, what you had to say about them or the you know, on the staffing industry on the whole. Now, you've been a expert witness in other cases. Can you get into a little bit of that for us? Give us some you know, some background on why they would call you as an expert witness and maybe some of the cases that you have dealt with as being an expert witness.
Two of the cases that I've been expert witness on is one is the trade secrets rights that staffing firms have. What is a trade secret? What isn't a trade secret? Actually, that case is a benchmark case now because it's been incorporated into Colorado statute, and it's the benchmark for that. And I was the expert witness on what is considered a trade secret in the staffing business and what isn't considered a trade secret. And the second witness that I performed a service for was in the staffing business on a testimony about using contractors for independent work and using contractors that are W-2 employees. And I was able to kind of illustrate that there may be multiple opportunities for multiple people that are independent contractors that may be serving two or three, even four different clients on the same day.
Right.
And that's the nature of our business.
And you know that, Andrew, this is Sam. That's one of the things that came out in the IRP6 case as well. I think in this case, and, you know, with you being a witness in the case early on, obviously you were not able to sit in the courtroom and hear what was going on as far as the exchange between the prosecutor and the IRP6. But that was one of the points that I think it came down to a lack of understanding on the part of Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch from the standpoint of how the industry actually works. And when you have a person who is ill-advised or ignorant to how an industry works, and then he knows how to manipulate a jury, he presents to a jury that this can't be right because you, as one of my jurors, you know, you work at King Soopers, and you're fighting to get 30 hours a week in, and they're going to sit here and tell me that they are working multiple contracts or that it's part of the industry that people can work multiple contracts. And so, you know, Andrew, when you hear something like that, I mean, it has to make you, you know, kind of think, you know, man, I just wish I had that opportunity to say what this industry is really about.
Sam, just think of this one thing, Sam. We've all, in some part of our lives, unfortunately, have had to deal with an attorney. An attorney bills you. 10 minutes later, who is he billing?
Exactly.
The next guy.
And probably in there, he probably billed it, you know, a minimum 1 hour billing for that 10 minutes.
For that 10 minutes, exactly, you know, or half-hour increments, however he's set up. Very, very, very similar. You're running a parallel track to the way technology consultants do their business. It's a billable hour. It's billable work. It may only be 10 minutes to write the script, to do these things. Well, I mean, we can't manage 10 minutes of work. You know, we bill on the increments by the hour. And, you know, we may have guys that are on four contracts at the same time. And that's normal work. That's what, you know, if you, how I explain it to you would be how I would explain it to a jury.
Mm-hmm.
We've all dealt with attorneys. In our business, in the staffing business, especially in technology, same thing. We all work on different stuff.
And you know, Andrew, on that point, we want to bring into the conversation Joseph Thurman. He is also in the staffing industry in Denver. And Joe was actually, he was allowed to testify. But, you know, I think that, you know, the Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kurz, he was trying to play on the fact that, you know, Joe didn't have as many years experience as you did. But when it comes down to explaining the industry, you know, I think, you know, Joe shares your thoughts as far as how the industry works. So, Joe, welcome to the program. We're going to bring you into this conversation here in a second. So, Cliff, how about hitting that particular liner there, and then we'll jump back in here before going into this next break.
Our friendly local pilot in command and GOP spokesman Duke Brooks calls himself a paleocon, and rightfully so, since it's clear that anti-communism is in his DNA. His parents were friends with Joe McCarthy, Bill Buckley, and Whitaker Chambers, so what would you expect? There's no truth to the rumor that he has a dartboard with Alger Hiss's picture on it, but you can get your weekly dosage of old-school conservatism, right-wing politics, American history, and hanger flying on Radio Free America with Duke Brooks, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins.
So, Joe, coming in on what Andrew was just saying, what's your experience as far as contractors in the IT industry and working multiple contracts, and you know, how is that received in the industry?
Well, thanks again for having me on the show again. And, Andrew, good to hear from you. I hadn't talked to you in a while, but good to hear your voice. So, but yeah, in regard to that, I mean, it's definitely even encouraged. I mean, you know, it's the way the technology allows us to multitask, you know, is definitely an opportunity the staffing firms look to leverage to obviously drive more revenue. You know, like Andrew had mentioned, whether it's an attorney or I remember the last time I was on, Cliff mentioned a babysitter. You know, if you're a DBA and you're watching databases and you're doing, you know, different type of support work, there's nothing that limits you to only being able to monitor a database for one company at one time. Mm-hmm. You know, technology enables us to be able to leverage multiple contracts at the same time.
So our callers, our number is 718-305-7176, 718-305-7176. We're talking about the IRP6 case and how the staffing industry was part of that case, and how it got criminalized as far as Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kurz just turning something into what is normal business practice and criminalizing it. And so on the phones, we have Andrew Alberelli, who is the Principal Executive Officer for Remy Corporation, and then Joseph Thurman, who is also in the staffing industry in Denver, Colorado. And we're talking about how the industry works. And let's get a little bit into how the billing process works, and then we'll be going into a break here in a moment, so we'll be cutting you guys off to go into that. But, Andrew, even in your letter to U.S. Attorney John Walsh, you spelled it out right here. You broke it down as to, you know, and the fact that they did not allow this into the trial, it's amazing.
That's ridiculous.
It's a very simple process. It is not as complicated. What he did was make a very simple business model to be the most complicated process there was ever invented in the world. And you have mm-hmm. to understand the word recruiter goes back 2,500 years to the Romans, when you were paid a fee to bring someone into the Roman army. It's a very simple process. It's there's a bill rate, a pay rate. We bill a client, we pay a pay a contractor. The money in between there is called the spread, and that's how we make our money.
Okay, let's come back to that when we get back from on the other side of this break. This is A Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. We're talking about the IRP 6 case and how the staffing industry part of it got criminalized. On the phones, we have Andrew Alvarelli, principal executive of Remy Corporation. We also have in the studio Joseph Thurman. Cliff Ethel, we'll be right back in a moment. Don't go away.
Hey, liberals, why don't you try rooting for your own damn country for a change?
My name is Tom Thornton.
And my name is Cindy Thornton. We've been married 38 years, we're retired, and this is how we live united.
We play golf and we travel, but we also decided we were going to give to and volunteer with United Way at our community free health clinic.
I do the nursing at the clinic.
I work the front office, checking in patients, greeting them, making them feel comfortable.
United Way is how we contribute, because we know our time and money are going to the right places, the places that need it most and implement it best.
Judging by the thank yous we get at the clinic, I'd say we're doing the right thing with our retirement, too.
We even get a few bless yous. It's incredible.
We're Tom and Cindy Thornton. We volunteer at our community free health clinic. So we don't just wear the shirt.
We live it.
Give. Advocate. Volunteer. Live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Molon LeVay Challenge Coins and Wares. Similar to challenge coins used by various military units, these MLCCW coins are ideal for anyone that champions the right to keep and bear arms by highlighting the Second Amendment and the Greek phrase, Molon LeVay, which translated means, come and take them. Come check out our pro-freedom, pro-liberty, and pro-Second Amendment coins and shirts at MLCCW.com. That's MLCCW.com.
Hello, I am Robert Garding of the New Wise Conservatism Radio Show, heard on Saturdays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 Central, through conservativenationmedia.com. Being on the air since 2007 from behind the silver CNN microphone of freedom, we've helped people become more informed to keep socialists out of the White House and Congress. But that work isn't over yet. Tune in Saturdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on CNN for the New Wise Conservatism Radio Show, the voice of reason in our unreasonable world.
Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. I'm Sam Thurman with Cliff Stewart and Ethel Lopez. On the phones, we have Andrew Alvarelli in the studio. We have Joseph Thurman. We're talking about the IRP 6 case and how the staffing industry got criminalized as far as the use of the staffing companies by IRP Solutions, how Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch criminalized a normal business practice. What we have here with the IRP 6 case is a debt collection case that got criminalized. Our phone number is 718-305-7176, 718-305-7176. So, Andrew, in the letter that you sent to U.S. Attorney John Walsh in Denver, again, going back to what we were talking about just before the break, you broke it down for him as far as, you know, how you get paid and the pay rate, the bill rate, and all that kind of stuff. And basically, you know, talking about how either you as a company go out and solicit companies to get their business to be able to provide them with human capital, or companies come to you and say, hey, Andrew, I have a need for a software developer. Find me somebody. So, I mean,
correct.
You know, when you look at IRP Solutions, IRP Solutions went to staffing companies. And, you know, we like to be clear on it with our listeners that, you know, we're not talking about Kelly Services, where we need someone to answer the phones on Friday afternoon because everybody wants to go out and play golf. We're talking about specialized expertise as far as these types of positions are concerned.
Absolutely. And the need for them continues to increase, and the need for resourcing and finding them and uncovering them is a very, it's laborious. It takes a lot of time to uncover these resources, and they're not plentiful. And, you know, we are on the phone 10, 12 hours a day finding these type of people, and they are very specific niche players in this game, and you're not going to find them everywhere.
And to that point,
firms, go ahead. I'm sorry, sir.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Andrew, and to that point, you know, one of the things that IRP Solutions was criticized for was using multiple staffing companies. So in looking at your letter, you even broke that down for attorney U.S. Attorney John Walsh in the sense that it's not unreasonable for a company to have several staffing companies working on their behalf to find resources. Would you agree with that?
And I would absolutely agree with it. Joe's on the phone. Joe and I compete against one another. We have the same account, and we are trying to find the right person, and we compete against each other. That's a normal process. You may have 5 to 7 vendors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, clients have 5 to 7 approved vendors that they're going to go find resources for, and that's a normal process. Even if you're looking at public sector, government, state, city, municipalities, they put it out to a vendor agreement, and they may have 5 to 7 staffing firms that they put out their requisitions for, and those 5 to 7 staffing firms will go after and find those resources.
And that could be for one position. So you got 5 to 7 firms. You got Remy Corp. You got Joe's company. Then you got several others that are saying, hey, we got this one position, let's say at Oracle Corporation. We're trying to fill this PeopleSoft position. We're looking for this professional with this skill set, with this many years of experience. So there's 5 of us trying to place this one person so that we can tell Oracle Corporation, hey, we found the expertise, continue to use us. And that's how it's worked. I mean, that's what you're saying, right, Andrew?
Exactly. Staffing firms are only as good as the people they place.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I just wanted to, you know, there's another excerpt from your letter, and it says, I feel the majority of people are confused as to how staffing and recruiting firms actually operate, and first wanted to take the time to perhaps explain our business and show you that what transpired in this case is normal operations in the staffing industry. I mean, you were so cordial there to John Walsh and the U.S. Attorney's Office, and then you know, they pull you off the stand and won't let you testify, but then you go into, you know, basically how staffing firms bring contractors on, the bill rate, the spread, the margin, and things of that nature. Get into that a little bit with us so that the audience can understand that, you know, this is, you know, like the point you made about the, you know, the Roman army. Hey, you have a recruiter go out there, find somebody, say, hey, work for us, and we'll pay you either with, you know, freedom money or whatever. We'll pay you a rate. You work for us. So explain to the audience a little bit how that transpires in the staffing industry.
And it's not anything you need an abacus to calculate. It's a very, very simple process. We'll just go off a very simple number. I talked to Cliff. Cliff has the experience and the knowledge that I'm looking for. We negotiate a bill rate of a pay rate to him of $100 an hour. I now talk, since we're using Oracle as an example of this, I now talk to Oracle, and I negotiate a bill rate of $130 an hour. The $30 in between Cliff's pay rate and Oracle's bill rate is what's called in our business the spread, the margin that exists. And that's how staffing firms make their money and exist in the game, is the spread. So, again, a very, very simple process that got very diluted in this case that got very, very complicated when it's a very, very simple process.
Right. It's about making money. You find me. I mean, it's just like anything else. If you say, I'm brokering you to go find me something, like, hey, I need the, you know, rookie card for Babe Ruth. There's let's say there's 10 of them in existence. I need you to find me somebody who's willing to sell me one of those. And you tell him that I'm willing to pay, what, $100K for this rookie card. And if you can get less than that, You know, I'm willing to put $100K up, however much you can get this person to sell this rookie car for, the rest of the money belongs to you. So if you, Andrew, says, hey, I found a guy in California, he's got this car, he wants to sell it for 50 grand, you take my 100 grand and you keep 50, and everybody's happy. I made the agreement to pay you. And like you said in your letter, nobody puts a gun to the head of these staffing companies to say, this is, you're going to do business with us, you're going to engage with us, you know, no matter what our credit rating looks like with Dun & Bradstreet or whatever our background is as far as how long we've been doing business. Nobody puts a gun to these staffing industry's heads to say, you will go into business with these clients.
And on that point, Cliff, and Andrew, on the question of billing, okay, so there are situations, I think you talked a little bit about this in your letter as well, as far as, you know, you have situations where companies, they get behind on their invoices at times. And you have different sorts of ways of resolving those issues. And in the case of the IRP 6, you know, IRP Solutions was working with the federal government. We talked about the quotes that were being requested by the federal government. There was the FICMAS project, the Federal Information Case Management System, that had hit the street as far as an RFI was concerned. That was, you know, we're talking about, you know, huge money, because you had the virtual case file solution, which the government had already wasted about $500 million on. And then you had the Sentinel project, where there's been even more money wasted on that. So you look at a company like IRP Solutions, how much, I mean, you as a company owner, Andrew, you see a startup company, and you see that they have these opportunities and that everything is moving in a direction that, man, this thing is getting ready to blow up. There's some sort of risk-reward there, right?
Absolutely, and that's what you calculate. You calculate the risk-reward. You have conversations with the principals that are there. And, again, it's a free market. There's not a dictation that says you have to do business with us. And especially when you're looking at a pipeline of $100 million, or you're looking at a lot of the bigger pipelines that they had with state and city police departments. And as I shared with you, you know, the response we took to the county of Boulder for the coroner's office for the software, it was a perfect solution for them. And it worked.
And you saw it firsthand, so you had skin in the game, so to speak, as far as seeing firsthand a company that had a innovative idea, building it from the ground up, and a group of enterprising men who are starting a company, not doing anything fraudulent, not scamming anyone, and to see that type of situation get criminalized. And the fact that you did have skin in the game in that regard, I mean, that speaks volumes, especially when you look at a major case like this, where, like you said, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to go into a courtroom and say, hey, here's what this business is about, here's what this company was doing, and the way this company was doing business is exactly the way this industry works. Now, unfortunately, you know, and we know that it's a sales-driven industry. So you got commissions that come off of it and so forth. So, you know, you get somebody in there and they say, well, hey, I got to pay back my commission because I haven't been paid yet. Well, be patient. You know, yeah. IRP is right. Getting ready to close business. Why do you have to start saying that, you know, they're doing criminal stuff? That is just the furthest thing from the truth. And it just makes absolutely no sense at all that this thing went down the road that it did. Andrew, hang tight. We'll be right back in a moment. When we come back on the other side of the break, we do have our exoneree moment. So, Andrew, you might want to get a cup of coffee, get to do something. We're going to spend a little bit of time about exoneree, and then we'll jump back on this conversation about the IRP6 and how everything they were doing was above board. Everything IRP Solutions was doing was above board. There was nothing criminal here. This is a Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. We'll be right back.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Good evening. For Talk Radio News Service, I'm Jeff Holtzman. The House has passed a continuing resolution to fund the federal government until Saturday. The three-day stopgap measure is needed in order to buy more time for lawmakers to review an omnibus spending package that would fund operations until October. The $1.1 trillion measure is expected to pass right before the weekend. The FBI is unlikely to file charges against IRS agents who stonewalled dozens of Tea Party groups who applied for tax-exempt status in the lead-up to the 2012 elections. A Democratic dark money group called House Majority PAC announced today that it raised $7.5 million last year. That's more than double what the group raised 3 years ago, prior to the 2012 election cycle. A spokesman for the group said that it is trying to combat the fundraising efforts of conservative billionaires Charles and David Koch. The brothers spent about $16 million on TV ads in the fall of 2013 in an effort to make the Affordable Care Act a dominant issue in this year's midterm elections. Jeff Holtzman, Talk Radio News Service, Washington.
Wow, yeah, since the storm, it's been crazy busy for us. We got all kinds of office desks coming in. Now, here's a fancy one right here. It's missing a leg, but that's all right. Whatever. Washers and dryers from a laundromat. Oh, wow, and check this out. Another deep fryer. And I'm not sure what this doohickey is. Yeah, most businesses weren't ready for a storm like that, you know. But our work's really piling up here at Roberts & Son Salvage.
What will become of your business after a disaster? Nearly two-thirds of businesses aren't prepared for an emergency. And 40% of businesses that experience a disaster never recover. Make an emergency plan now, before it's too late. For a free online tool that helps you develop an emergency plan to keep your business up and running should disaster strike, visit ready.gov/business. Brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, the American Red Cross, and the Ad Council.
What does it take to be the leader in production systems technology? To be the one company that solves production problems at any plant, for any product, and with any technology? It takes a 30-year record of success. It takes total mastery of complex technologies with a history of delivering success every time, without fail. Only one company can claim that high ground in manufacturing line optimization, data automation, and systems integration, and that's Philadelphia Control Systems. In factories worldwide, Philadelphia Control Systems programs, software, and engineering solutions deliver optimal performance and output flow with a record that can't be matched. Any plant, any product, any technology. Philadelphia Control Systems, the leader in production automation since 1982. 800-335-9811, pcsforautomation.com. That's PCS, the number 4, automation.com.
You are listening to AJK Radio.
Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. I'm Sam Thurman with Cliff Stewart and Ethel Lopez. This evening we're talking about the IRP 6 story. And on the phones we have Andrew Alvarelli. In the studio we have Joseph Thurman. Our call-in number is 718-305-7176, 718-305-7176. We're going to take just a quick moment here for our exoneree moment. And we have William Lopez from Brooklyn. And then also on the phones, I believe we have Jeffrey. Is that not correct?
Yes.
Jeffrey
yep.
Deskovich.
That is correct.
Hi, gentlemen. How are you doing this evening?
Very, very good, actually. We're happy to join you two. Very good, sir. Very good.
Awesome, awesome. So, Jeffrey, you've been busy out there. So I understand that William is a benefactor of your organization as far as getting exonerated, and I think that is a great thing. And I know when you were on our show in the past, Jeffrey, you were talking about all the things that you wanted to do. So, Mr. Lopez, share your story with us. I know it goes back, you got exonerated a year ago now?
Yeah, that's correct. Actually, on January 23rd, 2013, I was exonerated. My nightmare actually happened in 1989 when I was arrested for allegedly committing a robbery, a botched robbery at a drug den. He's accused and convicted ultimately of murdering a drug dealer in 1990. And I ultimately wound up doing 23 and a half years in prison before finally getting some relief from a federal judge. And Jeffrey Deskovitz, the foundation, also they assisted me and my attorneys. They collaborated at the final year there and assisted in finding other evidence, critical evidence, of a witness in the Dominican Republic, which actually was sort of the door in the coffin, the nail in the coffin for my ultimate release.
So it looks like there was a little bit of deal making going on here, William, with regard to your case during the investigation, during the trial. Had one witness who couldn't make an in-court identification, a second witness who was a crack addict, who it looks like made some deals with the police or with the prosecutor's office. How did that play out?
She claimed that, you know, a deal that had been offered to her, because she had her own case, you know, was she was getting a benefit for her testimony. And then she turned around and said, well, the deal was off the table, and that was what she testified to. But despite the fact that this deal was supposedly off the table, she came walking out of the county jail shortly thereafter.
Yeah, I see here, what, 2 weeks after testifying, she was released from jail?
That's correct, sir. 2 weeks after she testified, she was released on her own case. What happened was there was a deal, like Jeffrey Tsar stated, there was a deal in place that was actually not off the table. That's what actually happened there.
Yeah, it was claimed to be off the table, yet somebody comes out of jail. So we all listen in and do the host, and, you know, you know what all that means.
Yeah. And you know, Jeffrey, we know that there are a lot of excellent attorneys out there, and I know you have access to great attorneys. We have good attorneys, great attorneys that are working with A Just Cause coast to coast.
Oh, yeah.
But I see here, William, it looks like, and the way I'm reading this, it says that you had an attorney who was not very diligent, never even interviewed two alibi witnesses, and let alone not even calling them to trial to witness during the trial. So what was he thinking?
Yes, I'll be honest with you, I don't know what he was thinking, but at the time I was ignorant to the law. I was fairly new with that, so I didn't know what he was really thinking about when he just decided not to call these witnesses.
It sounds like you had a pretty good judge on your side, William. Judge Garofis, he wrote an opinion when he granted the habeas corpus that this case was rotten from day one.
That's correct. The judge that was on my federal judge actually was a blessing in the sky, because naturally you need a good judge to oversee a case like this, and he was able to see through through all the cracks and actually see that there was a really serious wrong committed.
And as you know, I want to just add that often, whether you can get a judge who will actually be just that, a judge, somebody objective, just to fairly evaluate the new evidence, facts, and law, is often a key as to whether or not a wrongful conviction can be undone.
Yeah.
So enters Jeffrey Deskovitz. And how did you get involved in this case, Jeffrey?
Because William, through his brother, reached out to me, to my organization. Bill had been following me for years when I was just a columnist, and then when he saw that I started the foundation, he had his brother reach out to me, and ultimately we got in touch with Bill. From a foundational point of view, his case left off the pages because of the facts you just said. I mean, lack of in-court identification, another witness being a crackhead who had been high for a number of hours, presence of alibi witnesses, an affidavit from a jailhouse informant saying that this woman who claimed not to have a deal confessed to her that she
she had been confessed to that she was testifying falsely against somebody. So all those facts made Bill's case jump off the pages, and, you know, we immediately contacted him, and we wound up collaborating with his lawyers. Bill used to call in the office about once a week to talk to my legal staff, and one day he decided to push the envelope a little further and try to talk to me, and we hit it off, and I realized the value of having a contact to the outside, so I used to talk to him socially once a week, and the rest is history.
Awesome. And so, you know, for those listeners who are not familiar with Jeffrey Deskovic, Jeffrey, he was actually on a Just Cause Coast to Coast several weeks ago as part of our exoneree moment after a wrongful conviction of his own, you know, being 15 years old and then being sentenced to prison. And since that time, getting out and being exonerated, Jeffrey's been working with others. And Jeffrey, I was actually listening to the archive of the show that you were on previously, and how you indicated that, you know, once you got your settlement and you started thinking, you know, that there were several other folks who you were not going to leave behind. And that's why you got became an advocate from this perspective and reaching out to help other folks, you know, get exonerated. I mean, we know just from the sheer numbers that there are way too many people incarcerated who shouldn't be there. And I don't want to sound like I'm quoting Attorney General Eric Holder, but that's the facts.
Yeah,
that's it. And when you have that, you know, we need the folks like Jeffrey out there doing what you're doing. So I understand, Jeffrey, you and William are on your way to a speaking engagement, or that you're doing some engagements right now. So what's going on with you guys right now?
Yeah, so we did an interview earlier today with the New York Times. They're doing like an immersion reporting. They're interacting with Bill and myself, and they're going to write an article. I'm on my way to Canada Monday. I'm going to be up there from Monday through Wednesday. I'm speaking at St. Thomas University and in New Brunswick, Canada. Aside from the general lecture earlier in the evening, I'm going to be speaking with a number of prosecutors, defense attorneys, and police officers to discuss various ways that established wrongful conviction cases, including but not limited to my own, where wrong turns and other factors that have led to injustice. So I'm excited to participate in that. I've done some international media there with that as well.
Awesome. Okay, so Jeffrey and William, hold right there just for a moment. We have a little bit of business to take care of, and then we're going to come back to you and see how people can get in contact with you. Go ahead.
America is still the freest country on earth, and those of us who love America know that the Constitution is the reason for our liberties. ConservativeNationMedia.com isn't going to let those leftists in D.C. take our freedom away, and our constitutional expert, Matthew Opalisky, is leading the charge. Join Matthew every Thursday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central, for the Liberty and Constitution community to learn about our rights and freedoms under the greatest governing document of all time and what you can do to protect your liberty under the Bill of Rights. The Liberty and Constitution community with Matthew Opalisky, Thursdays at 10 Eastern, 9 Central, on ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins.
All right. Thank you, Cliff. So, Jeffrey, how can folks get in contact with you and get involved with the Deskovic Foundation and help you in what you're doing up there in New York?
Yes. I just launched a new website, www.deskovic, D-E-S-K-O-V-I-C, www.deskovic.com. You can email me through that new site. People can assist. We have a Facebook fan page. Just go to Facebook and then put in the search field the Jeffrey Deskovic Foundation. There'll be a picture of me and Dr. Phil, Tony Danza, Derek Jeter. I need people to like the fan page, because once I can demonstrate to corporate donors and sponsors that I have a following, then we can see if we can get them to contribute financially. So that's one way people can do that. The foundation website has the capability of receiving donations. So the president, say whatever anyone will about his politics, I'm not getting into that aspect of it, but he raised $100 million on donations, ranging mostly from $10 to $100. So every little bit helps. There's clearly more people like William Lopez out there that we want to try to clear, many of them non-DNA cases. So most of the Innocence Project type organizations are not options for them. That's the gap that we seek to fill. So I want to encourage people to do that and learn more about wrongful convictions and share the information with your friends and family.
All right. And, Jeffrey, we want to thank you and William for joining the call this evening. That's Jeffrey Deskovic along with William Lopez. Lopez, for our honorary moment. And, you know, the phone number for Jeffrey is 914-703-1327, 914-703-1327.
And also we want to let everybody know that we did put a link to Jeffrey's website on the AJC radio website, so if you guys can go out there and click to, you know, support him and what he's doing to help others get exonerated. So we'll be right back in a minute with more Just Talk Radio Coast to Coast, where we bring education, awareness, and information about the judicial justice.
If you love America, you're among friends here.
Wildfires burn millions of acres each year. And each year, wildland firefighters like Fire Chief James Hall battle to contain them. But they can't do it alone.
A single ember that escapes from a wildfire can travel more than a mile. It can ignite and destroy your home, your community, or more. That single ember can be just as dangerous as the wildfire itself. But you can do something firefighters can't. You can act now to prepare your home and your community for wildfire. You can reduce the risk. Do your part. Go to fireadapted.org.
Get fire adapted. Learn what you can do now to reduce wildfire damage later at fireadapted.org. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council. Learn more at fireadapted.org.
Okay, so just type the job website address here. That's it. Then you enter what job you're looking for there.
Electrician.
This is Peter. Recently, he got help going on the internet for the first time to look for a new job.
Okay, then you just hit search and...
In the past, Peter's gotten work through people he knew, but he heard there were more jobs online.
There we go.
These are all for me?
Uh-huh.
Really?
He had no idea just how many.
I can't believe it. This one looks good.
Peter is thinking the internet might be for him after all.
And this is just one website.
Wow. Why didn't I do this sooner?
See what the internet can help you do at everyoneon.org or call 1-855-387-9166 to find a free training class near you. Brought to you by Connect to Compete and the Ad Council.
At Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. We're talking about the IRB 6 case this evening, and on the phones we have Andrew Alborelli. Andrew is the Principal Executive Officer of Remy Corporation, and this is a interesting situation because of the fact that Andrew was called by the IRP6 during their trial in 2011 as an expert witness, and Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch objected, and Judge Christine Arguello obliged and said, yeah, Mr. Alborelli, you're not going to testify today. You're going to step down. Now, to give our listeners who may have tuned in late, Mr. Alborelli, he was going to testify as to the legitimacy of IRP Solutions and the way they were conducting business, and that there was nothing in the way that IRP Solutions was doing was any different than any of the industry standards. And so, you know, we've talked a little bit about even how a company goes after business and then how businesses go to staffing companies to get business. Ethel.
Yes. I'm looking at this letter, Andrew, that you'd written to Attorney General John Walsh. And I want to read just a paragraph here, just a short paragraph, and then I have a question. On many occasions, we are shared information on the financial stabilities of companies and look into those companies to determine if they are solvent to pay our invoices. On occasion, they are not. Some companies file for bankruptcy, some close their doors, and others negotiate payment plans with staffing firms. At the year end, we simply write off the bad debt, a very normal business practice. In speaking with these men, they have neither closed their doors nor filed bankruptcy protection. It is their intention to ultimately make good on their debts. And my question is, what would be the deciding factor for a staffing company to file a suit or just write off the debt? I mean, since they could do either one, why would they choose to do the suing rather than just writing a debt off?
Well, you also have to understand, you would more than likely write the debt off because the amount of money you would have to spend to, you know, collect the debt, it would be near impossible. So it's typical to write the debt off. It's a business practice. But more importantly is, remember what we were talking about. There's the bill rate and there's the pay rate. You're only out of pocket the pay rate.
Right.
That was never brought up in the case.
Exactly.
You have invoices that are inflated with the spread. And in some cases, when you're looking at Kelly Services or you're looking at some of the bigger firms, their margins may have been 50 or 60% on the people they were placing there.
Yeah.
Right. So then they you know, the prosecutor then says, you know, you're on the hook for all this debt, which, first off, you have the spread on top of there, the money that the staffing company was collecting anyway. And, you know, one time, Andrew, in talking to you guys about this, you know, this situation, you were saying how sometimes even the staffing firms are not really even putting up their own money that they even write off at the end of the year. Sometimes, and, you know, not to get too much into how you do business, but sometimes it's like a line of credit or something like that. You say, okay, we're going to payroll for this client with these individuals, and we'll take a line of credit and basically are paying the interest off this line of credit. So then in the end, essentially, what would be written off? What is the actual debt? I mean, is it true debt that the company lost, or is it just, hey, we had some interest on this line of credit, and we're actually getting a bigger tax write-off by writing it off at the end of the year than what we actually, you know, what we actually spent? And like I said, not to put you on the spot as far as when you do business, but just if you could kind of get, you know, theoretically and hypothetically into some of that.
I mean, hypothetically, if we're using a hypothetical case.
Yes.
You provide a consultant provides a service. You pay that person either net 7 days or net 15 days. You invoice your client net 30 days, or you invoice them at the end of the month, and they have another 30 days. So you carry, on the best scenario, 60 days of payroll before you ever receive your payment.
Mm-hmm.
So you set up lines of credit in that case. Now, there's some corporations, and including the U.S. government, that have net 90 payments.
They'll
pay you 90 days. So you're floating 3 months of pay before you ever get paid. And those lines of credit, it's just the interest on that number. And eventually your accounting firm that you're using is just going to deduct the interest off those numbers, and it's a very minimal fee. And that's what I guess – I don't understand why I couldn't have testified to bring that to the attention was – you're talking about very minimal numbers, and it would if the fellows would have been left alone to finish the project, everything would have worked out because they would have sold the software and everyone would have got paid.
And you know, Andrew, that's the crazy part about it is that the IRP Solutions was primed and positioned to be able to pay their debts, and when you have a situation where there is business opportunity in Philadelphia, there's business opportunity in New York, federal government, Trinidad, the Bahamas, yet you have the federal government following around, just like, you know, they didn't allow you to testify. Well, every time IRP went somewhere where they could have closed business, Assistant U.S. Attorney Matthew Kirsch showed up, either by phone or otherwise, and said, hey, we're getting ready to prosecute these guys. And they would say whatever they said to make people go away.
Yeah.
And like you said, it's a no-brainer. If you're in the staffing industry and you know that you have invoices that are out there, and you have a company, like you said in your letter, and Cliff was reading before that, or Ethel was reading, that the guys had no intentions of closing the doors.
Right.
I mean, they had no intentions of filing for bankruptcy. It was their every intention to pay the
debt.
And that, and you know, that word debt kept coming up too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like people in the prosecution side were even referring to it as debt. So Andrew, as far as doing due diligence, you know, we've talked about a little bit of how the staffing industry works and the spread and the bill rate, the pay rate and so forth. But you as a company, and I'll use Cliff's verbiage, as far as, you know, let's say a hypothetical situation, what would you do as far as doing your due diligence to say either I'm going to do business with this company
mm-hmm.
or I'm not going to do business with it? And then, you know, once you assess the risk, you know, how much risk are you willing to take?
Yeah.
And that's what you look at. And you look at what your risk – it's a portfolio. You look at what your risk tolerance is. Hey, I may be having a great year. I may be able to risk $200,000 on this client and front run some money. Maybe I'm not having a great year and I'm not, you know, my risk portfolio, I'm going to be a little bit more conservative on extending the credit to this deal. But that's part of business. And I think the most important thing, the first takeaway from this, and it's a sidebar from your question, is how far the proposal got, the RFP that we got, that Remy proposed for software
yeah.
for the County of Boulder. That was under a Remy proposal. So it wasn't under Walsh's radar. He never knew who was proposing that software.
Right.
And he got down to being one of two companies to for the software to be chosen. So
exactly.
To me, that illustrates someone was deal blocking every deal that they turned to try to go create revenue. And
yeah,
the furthest we got, the furthest they got was a deal that no one knew about because it was under our paper.
Yeah, I mean, that speaks volumes to not only how viable the software was, not only how easy it was to comprehend and understand how it would fit in to, you know, government agencies, like you say, the city, the County of Boulder, but how much the government was interfering with business, with a small business. You know, you, like you said, you take it in under the radar of Remy Corporation, and suddenly, oh, this software is right there in the number two spot. And I don't remember why they didn't pick it if it didn't have, I think it may have been a mortuary module that
that's exactly what it was.
Yeah, they wanted that module immediately. But to have it right there to say that for your county, this software fits in immediately. But just like you said, it shows so much how the government interfered, how everywhere IRP went, that they stepped in. They were either, you know, in a hidden closet, up under a bed, somewhere, coming in to ensure that the software wouldn't get bought so that it couldn't be said that they've made revenue, and if you leave them alone, they can make more sales so that they can pay off the debt, and then everybody's happy at the end of the day.
Well, you know, Cliff, it's just as if the federal government was the one writing the script.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's you see this situation, you got this company and IRP Solutions, and you want to prosecute somebody. So you're doing everything that you could possibly do to ensure that they are not moving forward. Because once the sale is made, the case goes away. As a matter of fact, FBI agent, Special Agent John Smith, he is quoted as saying that during trial, right? He in the trial.
Exactly.
He testifies to the fact that if IRP had paid its debts, then we wouldn't be here. But then if you're doing everything you could possibly do to block IRP from paying their debts, then that obviously – you know, gets them there and brings them into the situation that we found ourselves in. So we're going to be talking a little bit more about IRP Solutions, and we have on the phones
Andrew
Aparelli. Andrew, I have to do that at least once a show.
He does it with me all the time.
It's a brain freeze or something. I don't know. Go ahead, Cliff.
Let's assume that if you're listening to conservativenationmedia.com, you're a conservative. You love America just like we do, and you don't want to get caught short in case the leftist government drops the ball and leaves the country and your family unable to get the basics of life in an emergency. Since that's the case, you're going to want a supply depot to get everything from patriotic gear to survival necessities to outfit and protect you and your family. Your pipeline of those essentials is right here at conservativenationmedia.com. Just go to our website, conservativenationmedia.com, and click on the Patriot Depot banner. That'll take you to the world's best-known warehouse for all your conservative and emergency survival needs. Wave your flag and be ready for whatever the future holds starting right now. Just go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the Patriot Depot banner to join the conservative revolution, where America always wins.
Americans have known Tennessee as the volunteer state since the War of 1812. Now, Tennessee is leading the way in another major conflict, the war to keep America's identity, values, and freedoms intact. Even if you've never walked in Memphis or hiked the Blue Ridge Mountains, if you respect traditional American values, you should know about the Tennessee Action Council. Tennessee Action Council fights to preserve American values, defend our way of life, and protect the U.S. Constitution. This isn't just Tennessee's battle. It affects every American who loves our country and wants to pass the real America, unstained by progressive liberalism, along to future generations. No matter where you are in this magnificent country of ours, Tennessee Action Council is on your side and on America's side. Go to TN4Action.com. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com, to volunteer for Tennessee and America. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com, to stand for America now.
Been looking for an online gathering place? You know, a familiar screen, does everything you're used to, except give you grief for being a conservative? You gotta try the Tea Party community. At TPC, you'll know how everything works from the very first minute, and you'll probably find a lot of friends who are already there. Organize, communicate, share ideas, upcoming events, pictures, and videos. The Tea Party community connects and empowers like-minded, politically conservative people like you. Sign up today at teapartycommunity.com.
Hi, I'm Kathy Henners, your host on Daily Roll Call on conservativenationmedia.com. Please join me each Friday as we talk about subjects like the Muslim Brotherhood, their goals, their agenda, and how it affects our schools, our law enforcement, and our communities. As a retired police officer, I'll give you an inside look into this issue and so much more. Don't miss it. Fridays, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central, right here on conservativenationmedia.com.
That's all Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. I'm Sam Thurman. Cliff Stewart, Ethel Lopez on the phones. We have Andrew Alberelli. We're talking about the IRP 6 case. So, Cliff.
Andrew. We have a question from one of the listeners. You know, we have a lot of people that have been, you know, following this case and, you know, have read your letter. And they wanted to get into, they want you to get into, you know, they were reading this paragraph where it says, you wrote, there are examples of companies that misled us, and we later found that they were bankrupt or insolvent. These would include FL2 as well as Brightkite. Both were small startup companies, Colorado startups that went bankrupt, forced us to forfeit, moved on, and we wrote off the bad debt. Many other firms I've spoken with have experienced and will concur with my assessment of this exact situation. So they want you to kind of get into what it is, FL2, Brightkite, what the type of business you did with them, and how it is that they were able to get away with, you know, having somebody write their debt off. But then you have the IRP6 that have been locked up in federal prison for 7 to 11 years and not been able to see their family for the last 17 months.
Mm-hmm. Which is a question that we all want an answer to, because there is no difference between what FL2 did and what the guys did. They're exactly the same instance. FL2 was developing software. They engaged several different staffing firms. They, throughout the entire process, kept telling all of us. Money's coming. We got venture capital guys coming in. We're going to take care of you. You know, we're assessing. So finally got to a point where we were no longer comfortable with providing resources because they weren't paying their invoices, and we ultimately pulled our candidate out, and they went bankrupt. End of story. There's nothing we can do. I could try to stand in line and I guess maybe get a few cents at an auction when they auction off the desks and the chairs.
Right.
There's no other process that I could go through. Bright Kite was another startup that their concept was that everybody would put like a kite on their phone and tell people where they were. Well, it was a great software idea initially, but in the long run, it didn't pull in the revenue that they had. And we ultimately, again, provided resources. It didn't pan out, and they closed the doors, and we wrote off the bad debt. Same scenario.
Yeah, and when you look at IRP Solutions, you know, like you said in your letter, that it was their intention to ultimately make good on their debt. They never went bankrupt, never told any of the staff and companies that, you know, hey, we aren't going to pay you, or, you know, disappeared and weren't in communication with these staff and companies. It was always their contention that we will pay you when we sell the software, when we get a contract. We'll pay you, you know, and if the prosecutor, Matthew Kirsch, had let that alone, if the special agent in charge of this FBI case, John Smith, if he would have left them alone, let them do business, that would have happened. But, Andrew, I mean, at any time, did it ever cross your mind that with FL2 or BrightKite, I'm going to go to the FBI and try to bring up some federal charges on these two companies?
No. It would never cross any business's mind.
That's an emphatic no.
I mean, it's ludicrous to say, I know exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to call the FBI and prosecute them for this.
Or worse yet, Andrew, you say, I know people in the federal government, okay, and I'm going to destroy your life, and I'm going to bring your business down, and I'm going to bring down everybody around you. So hold on, because I'm getting ready to make your name mud in the industry. Does that ever cross your mind?
And Sam, hold on. These are good guys. These guys are quality individuals that are reside in our database that we call, that are skilled developers. This is not, hey, I got a great idea, let's scam these people. Oh, by the way, I'm going to formulate a method that, oh, I'm going to scam the FBI and law enforcement out of money.
And you know what's crazy about it? You have law enforcement working in your building. You're on the phone with law enforcement every single day. Mm-hmm. And you're going to the highest law enforcement agencies in the land and doing demos. You know, sometimes I refer to it as, you know, do you think that IRP was bucking to be the dumbest criminal on that show, the dumbest criminals in America? I don't think so. I mean,
no.
I mean, that you, it just doesn't even stand to reason that you're running a scam or trying to scheme somebody out of something when you're around law enforcement all the time like that.
Exactly.
It absolutely makes no sense at all.
And you know, Andrew, when you talk about these guys and, you know, being professionals and, you know, professional consultants, skilled, you know, people in their industry, let's just talk about that for a minute. We got Demetrius Harper, who is a DBA, have been for about, you know, 10, 15 years. Like you say,
has interviewed at our clients.
Exactly. I mean, this is a guy that you're saying, hey, and I've been a consultant for a long time. I worked for Remy before. I've worked for Joe, and actually I work for Joe's company right now. You know, Andrew, when I'm finished, I'll call you up. But I know that once you get a reputation that, hey, you're a good consultant, you satisfy the client, you get the work done, you have the skills that we need, you'll get a call, you know, like, hey, Cliff, this is Andrew. Man, we got this client. They're looking for somebody with your skill set. Please tell me you're available right now. I'm like, hey, Andrew, I'm working something with Joe over here. But, you know, if you want to give me a second one that I might be able to work remote, I'm right there with you. I'll work them both at the same time as long as they don't interfere with leaving any work undone with either of the clients. So you got Demetrius Harper, who's a DBA extraordinaire. I've had people tell me that when I've worked with Demetrius or who've worked with him, that this guy is one of the best. You got Ken Barnes, who the same way went from being a DBA trained by Oracle for years and then became a Java developer. And you get the same thing when people hear about Ken. I mean, they're like, hey, man, tell me Ken Barnes is available for work. We got this Java project. We need somebody like that. Then you got, you know, Gary Walker, who is the genius of all geniuses. I mean, Gary mentored me when I was in college, and every time I had a problem with some software engineering stuff, he's like, hey, here's your answer. And this guy, you know, he's the brainchild behind the Silk software. And Gary's got like 25 years in the software industry as an architect, as a system architect, an application architect. I mean, he's worked at some of the, you know, the top Fortune 5 companies. He sat down with the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom showing them the software that he built for Lockheed. I mean, this guy is the guy if you need some software done right. Then you got my brother, Clint Stewart. He's a cybersecurity specialist. You got Dave Serpolo, who's the software trainer extraordinaire. Then you got who did I miss? About David Banks, who's the database architect, who you know can come up with a database to get your system running performance tuned to death. You know, these are guys. I don't just say this because I know these guys. I've worked with them in the industry. I've heard people that we've worked with at a client be like, man, you know, with this guy, we don't have to worry about anything going down. We don't have to worry about our system crashing. And yet the prosecutor tried to paint the picture of these are men who don't know,
they didn't,
you know,
have the goods,
what they're doing. Yeah. They don't have the skills, or they don't have the experience to try to have make some of this software. Please speak to that for me, Andrew.
Well, I don't even need to speak because their reputations were already existing. You know, we started Remy in 1999. We'll just take Demetrius. There's pages of notes and references, and here's this, you know, here's what he did here, here's what he did there. I mean, you just look at this, and the level of professionalism these guys were able to execute for clients here in Colorado and elsewhere was pretty amazing. And we were always calling. They weren't available because they're developing software themselves. They're working on their project. So we would just go, you know, we got to leave them alone a little bit because they're working.
Right,
and,
right.
And you know, go ahead, Andrew. Finn.
Go ahead. And that was, you know, that these guys were, you know, the top of the game. We have an 83% reuse ratio. That means once we find a consultant and we like them, we reuse that consultant 83% of the time. We'll always go back. These guys were in our hopper to use, to present the client saying, hey, this is the best of breed that's out there.
Mm-hmm. Wow, and yet amazing. You have the prosecutor who wants to try to paint a picture that's, you know, nothing of the sort. That wants to try to say these guys are scammers and all this. And it's totally, totally ludicrous. And I mean, Andrew, even if you had only sent them to clients and heard from, you know, from what the client said that, hey, these guys are great, but, you know, they all work with you and myself and Sam as well on this RFP for Boulder County. You saw the way that these guys could come together as a team and say, hey, we can get something done. We can get this RFP developed. We're willing to create a new module, you know, if need be. But, I mean, you saw firsthand that these are not crooks. These are not criminals. These guys are in it to win it, and they are the kind that put their nose to the grindstone and get things done.
But, you know, Cliff, the prosecutor and the judge didn't want the jury to hear this kind of thing. I mean, when anything that came up about their character, anything came up about their professionalism, anything came up about them as family men, as Christian men, you know, someone would make some dumb statement. Like, well, your character is not on trial. Excuse me, my character is on trial. You're calling me a criminal.
Exactly.
Go ahead, Cliff.
Conservative Nation
well,
Media.
Cliff, one thing we should definitely
ahead.
Discuss is, you know, I don't know the exact number that RFPs were submitted to Boulder to the County of Boulder that day. I can mm-hmm. estimate by when I presented it and when I was stamped with it and could look. That stack had to be 24 to 26 high of companies that responded to the RFP. So they went through 20, let's go on the low end, 24 companies. They mm-hmm. selected two that they felt were valid and could get this done. And the only way we lost out on that RFP was the module didn't exist, but we could produce it. And they needed it in a time frame immediately in response to the RFP, and we could have developed it if we were given just a little bit more time and would have been awarded that RFP. I guarantee you that.
Absolutely, and it speaks to the fact that these men, with a smaller group of people, could come together and say, hey, us as a group, we can get this done the same way they did the Silk software. It's like, yeah, did Gary need help? Absolutely. Look at having a time frame that was short. They said we got to get something done quick. But you saw firsthand, Andrew, as you just mentioned, that they came together and only one other company. Now, we're talking about Andrew Alvarelli and the IRP 6 that helped on this IRP. When you have other companies, 24 other companies that have teams of people to write these IRP, and I mean these RFPs, and they got put on the back burner so that IRP could have an opportunity. So
ConservativeNationMedia.com starts off the work week every Monday with The Big Way. It's Inside Tennessee with Dave Vance. But even if you're not from the Volunteer State, the issues that affect Tennessee are spreading all over America. Dave Vance brings his veterans' insight and most informative guests to Inside Tennessee every Monday, so make sure you check him out. Brought to you by Tennessee Action Council. Inside Tennessee, Mondays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central on ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins.
The Internet's official rhino hunting safari.
The odds of a young girl being discovered by an industry insider while singing to herself pumping gas? 1 in 300 million. The odds of the daughter of a clergyman from Severn, Maryland spending 11 weeks at number one on the U.S. singles charts? 1 in 19 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of selling over 40 million records? 1 in 800,000. The odds of this musician and performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 88. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm LeVar Burton, and I'm proud to be a book person. How do I choose a book? Sometimes it's the cover, sometimes it's the title. I guess I'm pretty visual. If a book's really impressing me and the writing is really good, I will peek and see what the last paragraph is, because the endings of books should rock you. I am a book person, and if you're a book person too, read to a child and spark a lifetime of ambition. Join me at bookpeopleunite.org, because reading is fundamental. A public service announcement brought to you by Reading is Fundamental, Library of Congress, and the Ad Council.
Hello, I'm Jennifer Meadows, your host on Grit and Grace. Please join us every Tuesday night from 10 to 12 Eastern for an honest look at the top political and cultural issues that are affecting Americans today. That's Grit and Grace, for conservative analysis that is smart and entertaining. Tuesdays, 9 to 11 p.m. Central, 10 to 12 Eastern on ConservativeNationMedia.com.
Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. On the phones this evening, we have Andrew Alborelli of Remy Corporation. We're talking about the IRP 6 case, having some very insightful dialogue as to how the staffing industry works and how IRP solutions in that case should have never gotten criminalized. Andrew, I was just reading a little bit of your letter, and then all of a sudden it hit me during the break. Did you ever hear anything back? I mean, other than, you know, you showed up at trial and then they dismissed you off the stand and wouldn't let you, you know, exercise that expertise and be able to shed some light on this thing. But did you ever hear anything back from the U.S. Attorney's Office in Denver?
Never.
No letter of reply, no phone call, no nothing.
Nothing. Never. Never heard a word. And from a judicial procedure, if the judge had wanted to question my expertise, I would have been brought in the chambers. That would have been a normal judicial policy. I don't share with very many people, you know, that what occurred that day for me as an American and for me is my American dream and, you know, the belief as an entrepreneur. It took a lot of wind out of my sail. You know, I've been a finalist for Entrepreneur of the Year for Ernst & Young in 2003 and 2004. I love the entrepreneurial spirit. And to see what had transpired, it really took the wind out of my sail. And as it progressed and progressed and progressed, it really made me lose faith in the American process.
Man, that's rough to hear, you know, because, Andrew, a lot of what, you know, we thought the judicial process was about, you know, hey, you're innocent until they prove. I mean, they got to prove without a shadow of doubt that you are guilty. They got to have evidence upon evidence upon evidence that you committed a crime. There's no way, you know, and just like when the proffer was sent to U.S. Attorney Walsh up there in Denver, just like when your letter was sent, you know, we're thinking, and the guys as well, that like, hey, man, you know, here's Andrew. He's an entrepreneur. You know, he started from the ground up and he's built his business. And this is somebody who, you know, has seen our product, who believes in it. And the government will understand when he testifies, when they read his letter, that this is how business is done. And to, you know, the only thing we can say is that we were naive to the process. We were naive that the system is broken, because we thought it worked. We thought if you bring your evidence to prove your innocence, then guaranteed they're going to see it. They're going to believe it, because there's nothing else. I mean, when you got truth on the table, the only way that truth doesn't prevail is when people accept a lie. And that's what we came to grips with, that, you know, the American dream is so much of a lie. Even though some do achieve it, the ones that don't, the ones who are cast down, the ones who, like, you know, IRP6, that are put in prison for having a dream, and not only just their own dream, but, I mean, this came to fruition for, you know, for the American people. When Gary saw 9/11, when he saw the hole at Ground Zero looking out in New York City, and he looked down and saw that, his dream was that I'll make software so that the U.S. government will be able to take this information that they've gathered, they'll be able to share it among themselves, and we'll ensure that nobody will ever, ever on the American soil commit this type of atrocity again. And to have that cast down in front of you, and to have your own country be the one that locks you up because you were a dreamer, that is hard to deal with. It's hard for them, obviously. It's hard for us looking out at it.
Well, Cliff, you know, it was hard to hear Andrew just say what he just said.
I've known Andrew.
I think everybody here in the room was kind of like,
yeah,
it hit us, man. It hit us like a brick,
yeah,
because we can feel it.
Yeah, because I've known you, Andrew, for, I don't know, I guess somewhere on the order of 15-plus years, and you know, we've had a few conversations that may have been a little more than casual, not about business, about some personal stuff. But that one right there hit me, man, because I'm realizing that our pain, you're feeling it. and yeah. and you see it and you get it and you understand that there's something wrong with the system. And just like you said, you know, America lets you down, and that is hard to deal with. I mean, you're a veteran, just like my brother Clint. He's a veteran. David Banks, he's a veteran.
That's right.
Gary had a presidential appointment at the Air Force Academy, mm-hmm. and to know that, you know, your country that you serve that let you down, I know that's got to be hard.
And both Kendrick and Demetrius are sons of career
right, exactly.
soldiers,
that's
you know.
Right.
And so, you know, and when Andrew, when you mentioned the thing about if anyone had any questions at all about your credentials, mm-hmm. then, you know, put the brakes on. Dismiss the courtroom. Let's go in the chambers and talk about
exactly.
it. You know, we have heard several attorneys say that. And the fact that it did not happen, like you said, I mean, Andrew, I wrote it down here. You were talking about earlier as far as there was some deal blocking going on there. And except for the fact that when they didn't know where IRP was, then things moved right along as they should have and as everyone expected it to happen. IRP would have been able to pay their debts. The situation with you not being allowed to testify as an expert witness. Okay, so you're claiming you didn't get my information in enough time, even though you've had it for over 3 months. Okay, let's go and sit down and talk about it. And when you saw that, and you know, we've been living this thing now for several years, and the fact that Gary and David and Demetrius, Kendrick, Dave, and Clint are all, you know, have been away from their families for going on 18 months now,
yeah.
you know, it's a hard pill to swallow when you say that this is the greatest judicial system in the world. So we understand, we appreciate your heartfelt comments, Andrew.
Yeah, and Andrew, go ahead. I just want to get your closing thoughts. We're winding it all up, but give us your last thoughts.
You know, my last thoughts are, again, the wind was taken out of the sail, and the judicial system isn't broken, Cliff. It's a business. It's a money-making machine.
Wow.
That you are convicted before it even starts.
Man.
It's not broken. It's running a business, and they're running it to make money.
Very well said, my brother.
Andrew Alberelli, Principal Executive Officer of Remy Corporation. Thank you for spending a couple hours with us this evening to talk about the IRP 6 case and shedding some light on this atrocity. This the mockery that's been made of our judicial system and the injustice that our brothers in of IRP 6 have had to experience. Cliff.
Yep, I want to say thank you to everybody, all the guests. You know, thank you to Andrew Alberelli, Joe Thurman, to our exoneree, to everybody in the chat room. Andrew, Sam and I will have to get up there and sit down with you at one of your restaurants up there in Denver. We'll set something up. the K&D Productions, back in the control room, Captain Kyle and Dustin Jackson helping out Ill Skillers Girl. We appreciate you guys. Couldn't get it done without you. To the Just Cause Radio production support team, you guys make it happen. You give us what we need to put on a great show, and we appreciate it. To the truth, we know that you're out there, and we appreciate you.
Ethel, what can folks do?
Call Eric Holder's office, 202-514-2003 and 2005, and ask him to investigate the case of the missing transcript for the IRP 6.
We got to make it happen. We also got that petition out there on change.org. Go to change.org, do a search on IRP 6. You can read the all the information about the IRP story on freetheirp6.org, freetheirp6.org. As Cliff indicated, we'd like to say thank you to William Lopez as part of our exoneree moment this evening, and also Jeffrey Deskovic and the Jeffrey Deskovic Foundation. You can go out to ajcradio.com and get a little bit more information about what they're doing. And also, we got a note here. Shout out to our friends, the Central Park Five. They have a case coming up, a hearing on the 27th of January. They're going to court to get compensation for that wrongful conviction. They've been exonerated now for what, Cliff, like 10 years or something like that? And
yep.
They've still been fighting?
Still fighting.
Man, but hey, we said we put that word out there for them.
Good
you
luck,
know, keep
guys.
Them, keep them in, their, in your prayers.
Yeah.
And if you live in New York, go down to the courthouse. Give them some support. If you live in Colorado, look up a Just Cause Coast to Coast and see how you might be able to help us out. We have a lot of things going on. Tune in on Thursday. Look at our websites. We got a couple of different shows going on. Cliff won't be with us on Thursday. He's going to be joining Pastor Rose Banks on another show where they're going to be talking about some of this injustice. So we got a lot of things going on.
Oh, yeah.
This is a Just Cause Coast to Coast, where we bring you education, awareness, and information about judicial injustice. Thanks for joining us this evening. Have a good night, America.
Good night.
You know, we went on vacation this year, and we went to Turkey.